Wouldn't it be nice if your cash savings could just grow by itself? With the Wealthfront Cash Account, it can. Earning 4% annual percentage yield from partner banks on your uninvested cash. Nearly 10 times the national average. Just imagine if other things in your life worked the way Wealthfront works. If your house plants grew at 10 times the average rate, you'd have 10 times fewer issues with sad, stunted succulents. Your crocodile ferns would grow to the size of crocodiles. Wealthfront's cash account keeps your money thriving just like that, earning you an industry-leading rate with no account maintenance fees and with free 24/7 instant withdrawals so you can access your money whenever you need it. Money works better here. Go to Wealthfront.com to start saving. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront is not a bank. The APY on cash deposits as of December 27, 2024 is representative, subject to change and requires no minimum. Funds in the cash account are swept to partner banks where they earn the variable APY. The national average interest rate for savings accounts is posted on FDIC.gov as of December 16, 2024.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. Entrepreneurship and product innovation are true drivers of change within the vision of a more sustainable future. There's always room for more people to work on solutions, small and large, that can change our way of life for the better. Combined efforts towards change between the industries and individuals will pave the way to a brighter future for people and the planet. Here at Brightly, we love to share new products, ideas, and entrepreneurs that are making it easier for individuals to live sustainably in their daily life. Today, it's my great pleasure to speak with someone who truly shares that mission and someone who I've been a fan of for many years. Julia Collins is the founder of Planet Forward and Moonshot, two companies making major headway in the fight against climate change in the food industry and beyond. So listeners, you're going to love today's episode. Let's get into it. Good Together listeners, I am so thrilled to welcome Julia Collins to today's podcast. I personally have been a big fan of Julia ever since discovering her work with Planet Forward years ago. I think I must have found her on Twitter. I mean, I you guys know I live on Twitter. I love it. And as a fellow female founder in the sustainability space, I've just always really been super inspired by the way, you know, she thinks about, you know, her various, I don't know, like businesses and initiatives. So welcome, Julia. So excited to have you.
Hey, Laura. I'm super, super excited to be here. I've been a huge fan of yours for many, many years, and it's nice to finally be connecting.
Awesome. So Julia, I wonder if you can get us started by giving our audience a little bit of an intro into sort of who you are and how you got to be where you are today in, you know, in the name of sustainability.
Oh my gosh, yes. I'll give you my life story in 30 seconds or less. So I am talking to you today from San Francisco, California, which is actually my hometown. I was born and raised here. My grandparents moved here during the Great Migration to start a dental practice serving the Black community. And this is the time when San Francisco was truly segregated. And so they built this practice where all people were welcome from all walks of life and all races. And I just always grew up, Laura, with this, like, everyone gather at the table ethos.
Yes.
And so I guess that makes a lot of sense in terms of why I love food so much. The other thing, you know, I was really close to my grandparents growing up, and they survived and lived through the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And so they also just taught me a lot about sustainability from the perspective of just holding on to what you had, you know, yes. mending things, right? If you ask my grandma for a stick of gum, she would like cut the stick of gum in four pieces and give one quarter to each cousin.
That's
she had
right.
a tin foil ball. She's the first person I know to really have a tin foil ball at home that they used, you know,
yeah.
she would wash out Ziploc bags and like, these are all the things that I do now. But it really came from my grandparents.
Yeah. It's so funny too, Julia. Like we oftentimes say that, you know, some of the best leaders in like, you know, zero waste or low waste lifestyles are our grandparents and people who came from a time where, you know, there wasn't as much abundance in terms of anything, especially single use items. So I love that you have that background because we all know somebody in our lives who does the washing out of the Ziploc bags, which, you know, we say that's kind of accidentally eco, but it sure is, right?
It really is. And like some things are hard and some things are easy, you know?
Yes.
And you just do the things that you can. You don't have to be perfect in order to live like a really sustainable lifestyle at home. And I think that's another thing that I learned from my grandparents.
Absolutely. So, you know, you kind of started to allude to this, but listeners, you know, Julia, as we talked about in the intro, is the founder of Planet Forward and Moonshot, two food companies focused on sustainability. But one thing that I thought was really interesting, and I think how I first heard about you was when before you've even founded Planet Forward and Moonshot, you've spent a long time founding other food-related businesses. And I believe when I first found out about you, did you pronounce it Zoom Pizza? Is that how it was called?
Yep. That's exactly right. It was spelled Zume Pizza, but we pronounced it Zoom. I was on a similar, you know, mission then, which was to use the power of food to help create a better planet. And more specifically, thinking about how to shorten supply chains to bring fresher food to customers and eaters, you know, how to think about automation to make
yes.
work safer, right, and more sustainable for folks preparing the food. I thought a lot about packaging. And actually, the first patent that I was ever awarded was for a compostable pizza box made from sugarcane fiber.
Ooh.
So really thinking about all the different ways that you could innovate within the food system, especially the supply chain innovations, just to create better outcomes.
Absolutely. And, you know, listeners, yeah, Julie was the first Black woman to co-found a unicorn company after Zoom was valued at over $2.25 billion. So such an exciting achievement for you. Of course, I know you were probably also like, hey, I've got a lot of work left to do, right? Like, I feel like that's how it is always, right? As CEOs, right?
It's totally true. As CEOs, we feel that. I mean, I think I just never have been aligned with like the external metrics for success. They never have like really resonated with me, which is kind of a double-edged sword, you know?
Sure.
Because
yeah.
on the one hand, like I don't get too upset if I don't meet other people's expectations of what success looks like. For example, like, you know, I had my first kid at 39, you know, I think my family would have loved for that to happen much earlier, but that never really bothered me. But at the same time, kind of the unicorn thing and the way that it looms so large in the founder psyche, I think is almost, not to sound overly dramatic, but I think it's almost a bit damaging, Laura, like how much
yes.
focus there is on what valuation you can drive as a founder, as opposed
yeah.
to like just how much value you can create and, you know, high growth businesses as opposed to truly sustainable and regenerative businesses. So I'm definitely proud that I achieved that milestone, but I have a little bit of, you know, an uncomfortable relationship with it, if I'm honest.
Absolutely. And no, I totally appreciate the honesty. And listeners, if you weren't familiar with Zoom, it was a robot-powered pizza company. And I just remember seeing a video of it and being like, this is genius. I'm also a type of person who, when I get pizza, my husband makes fun of me. I literally am waiting for it when it comes out of the oven. Like, I can't have old pizza. So for me, it's like, oh, wow, you're telling me that I can go and have, you know, an automatic pizza made for me that's going to taste great. And it's using technology and doing all the things like you said earlier, right? Like making our supply chain shorter, you know, helping with, you know, I do also believe that automation can actually help worker equity and, making sure that people have, better working conditions and lives. I'm a big fan of that. I know there's people that probably would say other things about it, but I absolutely agree. And so, yeah, I mean, just taking that experience, Julia, and, I believe Zoom, closed business and you probably thought, well, what am I doing next? Right.
So Zoom is actually still in business.
It is. Okay.
Being run by my co-founder and just an amazing group of folks who are really focused still on sustainability. But
oh, awesome.
My journey just took me in a different direction. I'm a parent and actually I know we both have 8 months old. 8 months.
I know.
Old,
it's 8 month so olds, fun.
Which is pretty yeah. fun. But I also have a 4-year-old and the experience of just becoming a parent really, really changed me. And I went from being sort of like concerned about, sustainability to absolutely obsessed with understanding not only the relationship between food systems and climate change, but how I could use food systems to fight climate change.
Wow.
And when I learned that, 34% of global greenhouse gas emissions came from food, I thought, oh gosh, this makes me really angry. But also this feels like a solvable problem.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that so this is such a common thing I hear from moms or, people as they talk about like their journey becoming parents is yes, like we all had thoughts about climate change. We knew it was urgent, but the urgency was never felt, never felt like it is as a parent. And I think a lot of people look inward first and they're like, okay, I'm going to obsess about the amount of waste my baby's creating. So, and I was doing this too, right? Like I was trying to make sure that we were cloth diapering and doing all of these things. But what I love about your story is, you took your background as an entrepreneur and said, I'm going to actually take my skills and do it in a really like impactful, scalable way. So tell me a little bit about like how the idea for Planet Forward kind of came about and how you started to think about scaling the business, balancing it with your new family. Like I'm super curious about it.
I just remember, Laura, there was one morning I was in the kitchen and I was heating up some breast milk for Mosi because I had to run to work. And I didn't have time to nurse. And I took the breast milk out of the fridge and it was like covered in plastic. And then I put it in a bottle warmer, which was made of plastic, and then put it in another bottle, which was plastic. And then I went to look for something, that I wanted to bring for lunch. And again, and I just thought, this is crazy. I looked at my kitchen and then I looked at everything in my house. And I don't know why, for the first time in my life, I just felt like I was being like buried alive by all of these incredibly like unsustainable products,
Yes. Absolutely.
And it just made me so mad. I was like, I have to eat. I have to feed my family. Like, why do I have to do this in a way that's also, so damaging to our ecosystems? And I thought there just has to be a better way. And I wanted to be, not just like a founder. I wanted to really be a catalyst. So I started just dreaming about what it would look like to build a truly climate-friendly product. And I thought, well, it's not enough to have a product. You really need to have a brand. And that was where the vision for Moonshot came from. It was really like, how do we create the world's first truly climate-friendly snack brand? And that was really the first vision for what I continued to expand on with Planet Forward. And I can explain a bit about Planet Forward side of the business too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, listeners, Moonshot, first of all, I'm actually probably not the biggest snacker. I know there's a lot of people out there who are constantly snacking, but when I choose to have a snack, I'm pretty careful about like what is going into my body. And so just the ingredients and the thought behind, what you're putting forward is so cool. And, from somebody who's never been on the food side of things, how do you go about like crafting a sustainable recipe or a sustainable food product? Like take us through a little bit about how that actually happens.
I think there's the way that it's normally done And then there's the way that we did it. And they're a little bit opposite. Yeah, I think normally people do a lot of like data-driven analysis on the market and the white space opportunities. And they look at a ton of Nielsen and Spins data to identify category trends. And we actually did the opposite. I took the perspective, and this is like maybe one of the things about, you know, entering the CPG market as a first-time founder is I just felt no allegiance to the status quo. Mm-hmm. And I was probably a bit naive. And I just thought, well, what if we did it the opposite way? What if we first asked, you know, farmers, particularly farmers who are practicing regenerative agriculture, what do you want to grow? What do you need to grow in order to maximize soil health, in order to maximize regeneration? And I can make anything, right?
Yes.
Because isn't that the truth? You can make a tasty snack from just about anything.
Yep.
So why not start with the ingredients that are the most regenerative, that are the most important from a soil health perspective, right? That are grown in these wonderful crop rotations. And so we actually found a collection of family farmers in Western Washington who were not only organic, but also practicing regenerative agriculture and were growing wheat. But they were just having to sell that wheat into the commodity system. They're growing the wheat in the rotation because it's a great nitrogen fixer. I mean, it was great in the rotation.
Okay.
But they weren't really getting a premium for their wheat. So that's kind of the story of how we decided to make wheat crackers. It was really falling in love with these farmers who were doing such good work in terms of soil health and climate-friendly farming, and then designing a product from their farms.
And I mean, so that is 100% different than the way other people have done this, right? I mean, whether you think about, you know, the data and analysis that you, that most companies will start off with, or even maybe somebody starts off and they say, well, I want to make a wheat cracker. So now I'm going to work backwards and find the best supply chain. Like the fact that you even just said, you know what, my company is going to be in service of, you know, mitigating climate change. And in order to do that, I need to focus on a raw material that is, you know, responsible for the environment when it comes to crop growth. And so the concept of thinking about regenerative agriculture as it comes to, you know, product development to me is just such a cool insight. I mean, did you just, how did you, I mean, to me, that's like just a, it's just so different, Julia. Like, what made you think about it that way?
I suppose I looked at the way things were, Laura, and I thought this is actually the opposite of how they should be. So maybe I should do everything the opposite way of how it's totally done. I mean, that sounds a little bit cheeky, but it creates this beautiful paradigm, right? So now we're thinking about what comes next, you know, and legumes are such great nitrogen fixers. So also a really wonderful part of these regenerative systems. So now we're super inspired to think about all of the amazing snacks that we can make from legumes. And we're not the only ones. There's so many people who are innovating around beans and things. So it was really just like focusing not only, you know, on in terms of how to do things differently, but probably a better answer is understanding the core values of our business and then making decisions based on those core values. So at the core of Moonshot, we are unapologetically climate friendly, and we stand up in support of farmers who are practicing regenerative agriculture. And that means we make product development decisions in line with those principles.
Absolutely. And so when it comes to the farmers in the equation, you know, I'd be curious to know, like, as Moonshot has grown and I think really proven, you know, market opportunity and market fit for this type of product development and company development, are you having, you know, farmers reach out and say like, hey, we want to join the program? Are you guys engaging with farmers in different ways?
I think we're seeing so much growth in terms of the adoption of regenerative agriculture, you know, broadly. And it's really exciting to, you know, have a small part in creating more demand for these products. But, you know, farmers have so much power and so much wisdom. And I think what we try to do at Moonshot is to approach all of this with a bit of humility, you know.
Absolutely.
As opposed to sort of saying like, you know, hey, y'all, here's what we think you need to be doing with your soil. We really want to learn from the good work that people are already doing. And then our job is to create amazingly tasty products that people love, brought to market in a way that makes them accessible. That's the magic of Moonshot.
Absolutely. And, you know, I had the chance to sit down and chat with Miyoko of Miyoko's Creamery. Listeners, if you're not familiar, they're just a really amazing artisanal vegan cheese company. And Miyoko was talking about how she basically, you know, had created a new way to make vegan cheese. And one of the interesting side effects of the way that they were choosing to do it, similar to what the way Moonshot's done, is, you know, they were able to create more sustainable farming practices, you know, in their ecosystem. And, you know, it started to spread. And now, you know, she was talking about, you know, the livelihoods of the folks she's been able to impact through this really impactful business has just been so interesting. And so from my perspective, seeing the food industry start to pay attention to whether we're talking about, you know, regenerative agriculture or ingredients that are more climate friendly, or even waste, like upcycled materials and foods, I find that fascinating, right?
Super fascinating. Yeah, we're members of the Upcycled Food Association, and we just love the work that folks are doing. You know, there's so many regenerative brands that I can name, but, you know, we're particularly close to the team at Renewal Mill and to the team at Regrained. And just, you know, really excited to see that brands and consumers are developing, you know, a real interest in the way that we can reduce food waste and also just create super tasty products.
Absolutely. And so the other thing I was going to ask you too, so as we think about, you know, different trends that are happening in the food and sustainability spaces, are there other ones we haven't covered? Like we just briefly touched on upcycled food trends. Like what, I mean, I'm curious, maybe you have thoughts on like some of the big actors of the industry. Are they starting to make changes, or are they just kind of like, you know, waiting to see what's going on?
I know these large companies can be a little bit slow right out of the gate, but when they mobilize, it's so powerful. I think, you know, I will say this all day long, the future of food is climate friendly, and now really is the time. So in addition to regenerative agriculture being a really important trend, and I hope it'll be a lasting trend in the same way that organic has been a lasting trend, I believe carbon neutral is going to be the most important consumer facing badge within the next 10 years. And I'm seeing more and more brands really reaching out to our company, Planet Forward, the software company, asking for help in establishing their baseline footprint, carbon footprint, you know, reducing their carbon footprint, and then getting to carbon neutral. So I think carbon neutral is the next big sustainability trend for sure.
Absolutely. And so when you are, you know, talking with brands as part of your work with Planet Forward, and you're helping them, you know, understand how to get more towards being 100% carbon neutral in their company, tell me a little bit about like ways they go about doing this. Like, I know everybody knows a lot about, you know, carbon offsets, but oftentimes, like, you know, that's not necessarily the best thing ever. Like if we can think about the impact of carbon on all aspects of our business and maybe thinking about reducing it at the source, I also feel like that's really important. So tell me a little bit about how you guys walk through the advice, you know, from a company perspective.
You're absolutely right that while carbon offsets can play an important role in a climate strategy and are often necessary to achieve total neutrality, you can't rely on carbon offsets to drive emissions reductions. You really, really do have to look for ways to reduce your emissions. And for consumer brands, what's so interesting about this work, Laura, is that, just for anyone who's listening who may not already sort of know about this, when you look at a company's carbon footprint, you measure it in scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3. Okay. Scope 1 is direct emissions, scope 2 is indirect emissions, but scope 3 is that everything that's in that big, hairy, complex supply chain. And for consumer companies, 90% or more of their impact is coming from scope 3, 90%. Mm. So in order for a food company or a beverage company or really any consumer company, fashion, beauty, to reduce their emissions, they have to get really, really clear on where their scope 3 emissions are coming from. So that
That's
means
fabulous.
Having, yeah, it's fabulous. It's really hard though. And actually it was so hard when we built Moonshot and we wanted it to be carbon neutral, it was really, really hard to figure out, you know, all of these things. How do we measure our footprint for the product? How do we measure our footprint for the company? How do we source offsets? How do we reduce emissions? And that's actually why we built Planet Forward, the software company, to help all the other brands that wanted to be more sustainable, to really make it easier for all the other amazing teams that wanted to build climate action plans around their consumer companies. So that's kind of how the two companies are related.
Yeah, I mean, and understanding too how your company, you know, how Moonshot was able to take those insights and then help other brands learn from them is really interesting, because I feel like from where we sit with Brightly and Good Together, you know, we see so many brands come to us and ask us the same thing, like, you know, how do we do better? How do we get, you know, whether it's, you know, a certain certification or how do we source things better? And there's so many different parts of the equation. So just being able to have, you know, some data sharing in the name of, you know, furthering more climate friendly businesses is just a really, I think it's a super important thing that all of us as business owners need to get better at, right?
Right. And the thing is, as business owners, we're already doing so many things, you know?
Amen.
We're hiring, we're fundraising, we're doing administration, we're marketing, we're creating content, we're, you know, and so there's no way that even the largest companies on the planet need help with climate action and climate initiatives, you know, because this really is deeply scientific work. So Planet Forward has a team of climate scientists that are dedicated to working with our customers, expanding our data. And we spend a lot of time helping our customers not just understand, you know, what their carbon footprint is, but what it means, where it's coming from, and most importantly, how to improve it.
Yes. And that actually kind of leads me to the next thing I wanted to ask you was, it was talking more about like the individual and helping people understand a little bit more about their carbon footprint. You know, I think a lot of us have taken these like carbon footprint calculators and we're trying to wade through everything. But I'm curious to know about, you know, your thoughts around the power that individuals have in affecting change from a climate perspective.
Well, I'll say two things, and the first might sound a little bit controversial, but
okay, let's hear it.
You know, I think there's almost too much emphasis put on individual responsibility to reduce our individual carbon footprint, and not enough on putting pressure on the largest emitters on the planet. You know, so don't get me wrong, I am a climatarian. I take pains to make all of my decisions, you know, in alignment with creating a healthy climate. But at the same time, you know, we have to put pressure on larger organizations, on our global food and beverage companies, you know, to decarbonize. So I think one of the best things that you can do is like the work that you're doing, Laura, like bringing people to the table, getting them fired up about sustainability, you know, helping them understand the issues and like how to put pressure on the right people. But what I will say this, I do think that, you know, climate doom is real.
Like, yes.
I wake up every day just like you do and work on these issues. And that can get really heavy, especially, you know, for all of us for different reasons. And so individual action in my life is one of the antidotes to climate doom. You know, it's the it's the thing that helps me feel empowered, right?
Absolutely.
And what I love about your platform and why I was like so juiced to talk to you is that you're not just doing the work yourself, you're influencing so many other people to do it. And so I think that's really the important thing is like, you know, don't just like get really great at composting. Make sure your whole block and all of your neighbors or everyone at your school knows how to compost, right? And, you know, brag about your sustainability on TikTok and Instagram so that other people are encouraged to follow. So individual actions are important where they lead to collective action and also where they help us to safeguard our own just emotional well-being during these like pretty heavy times.
Absolutely. And well, thank you so much for your kind words. And you're right. I mean, I think climate anxiety, climate doom is something that can consume all of us, or I mean, general anxiety about what's going on in the world. I mean, you know, we listeners, we can't, you know, understate how chaotic things are right now, and how, whether we're talking about individual rights or, you know, even rights to regulate what's going on with, you know, emissions here in this country. I mean, there's just so many things happening right now. And so I totally agree with you, Julia. From an individual perspective, we need to, you know, continue to affect change in whatever way that we can, but we do also need to continue to hold these larger companies and, you know, governmental institutions accountable. You said something earlier, I'm trying to remember the exact quote because I left it, but it was something like, when a big company acts, it's a really, really impactful moment. You said it much more eloquently than I just did, but you're right. they have a big power to affect change, right?
Yeah, they can be a little bit slow out of the starting blocks, but when they mobilize, it, you know, it really creates a sea change. And so
that's right.
Yeah, I say this all the time, but there is no silver bullet solution. You know, I'm deeply interested in the power of consumer brands to tackle climate change. You know, 60% of global emissions come from household use. Isn't that crazy?
That's things crazy.
Like grocery, it's like, right. It's just wild. So like that moment where I was feeling like I was being buried alive in my own kitchen by all the things, that was real. I was really sensing that, you know, the impact there. But at the same time, you know, human beings have existed on the planet for millions of years without that being the case. And so I really do believe that we can decarbonize our consumer space. I really believe it. I know that it can happen. And that's like what I get up super pumped about every day to do.
Yes, same here. Well, you and I are definitely speaking the same language. So Julia, just to kind of close out our conversation, I can't believe it's already almost been a half hour. I think you and I could just talk forever. I almost kind of want us to have like a talk show where we just like talk all the time. I think it would be so fun. So TBD listeners.
I say yes.
Let's do it. But to kind of wrap things up, I typically like to ask all of our guests here at Good Together the same question, because I think it's really interesting to hear the variety of answers we get to it, which is, you know, from where you're sitting, either as, you know, a multiple time founder, a mother, an individual concerned about the climate, whatever way you want to take this question, what is exciting you the most about what you're witnessing right now going on in the ethical and sustainable lifestyle movement?
I am very, very excited about this next wave of founders who are building really exciting food companies. You know, I think about like the team at Kiki Milk, who's doing a plant-based kids milk that's super, super tasty, you know, or the team at Healthy Hippo. Like I love Pat at 12 Tides, like my favorite seaweed snack on the planet. I just get really, really excited about the growth and proliferation of food brands led by founders who know that, you know, health is table stakes, taste is table stakes. Like where they really want to go with their brands is to be climate friendly.
Absolutely. Well, I am looking forward to looking up all of those companies after this. And listeners, we'll have all of the links, as you know, in our show notes on brightly.eco. But I am like, you know, especially as a new mom trying to get snacks together for my little one, like we started solids, which I'm sure you have too. That's a whole nother issue. But trying to get like yummy nutritional snacks is a challenge. So I'm definitely going over there. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Julia. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. And as a special thank you to our listeners, use code GOODTOGETHER to get 10% off all products in Brightly's brand new shop full of planet-positive swaps for your home.
Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
Is your cash working hard for you right until the very moment you need it? It could be if it was in a Wealthfront cash account. With Wealthfront, you can earn 4% annual percentage yield from partner banks until you're ready to invest, nearly 10 times the national average. And you get free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts 24/7, 365. 4% APY is not a promotional rate, and there's no limit to what you can deposit and earn. And it takes just minutes to transfer your cash to any of Wealthfront's expert-built investing accounts when you're ready. Wealthfront, money works better here. Go to Wealthfront.com to start saving and investing today. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront is not a bank. The APY on cash deposits as of December 27, 2024 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. Funds in the cash account are swept to partner banks where they earn the variable APY. The national average interest rate for savings accounts is posted on FDIC.gov as of December 16, 2024. Go to Wealthfront.com to start today.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.